How's the day, man?
It was good. Fantastic day. How about yours? Did you get to walk, exercise?
I did. I got to walk. I had a little bit of a hair issue, and mom, you know, kind of set me straight. She was like,
"Yeah, you still got a hair issue. You got something poked up there."
You know, when you have one of those days, and I guess it's a bad hair day, but it's been a great day. You know, it's not like it's been a bad day. It's been awesome. I've had such a great day.
There was a guy, there was a Peanuts character that had hair that stuck straight up like that. I forget what his name was.
Was that
Linus, maybe? Or
no, Alfalfa.
Alfalfa? No, that's not. I'm talking about Peanuts, not Spanky and the Gang. I think that was Alfalfa. Now, he had it too. Yeah, you're right. Alfalfa had it, but that's not Peanuts.
I love it. I'm going to put this up from Barbara. Katie, let's make sure you're there when Barbara comes in. Let's make sure Katie's there. I think Barbara's going to the Kingsport maybe, but super cool. I see Allison's here. Hello from the Blake. What's going on? Great to see you in here. WC1A has a great question on vitamins. Thank you for that. If you guys got questions for Doc, go ahead and put them in the comments. Let's jump into a couple questions if you're ready.
Sure.
Let's do it. Okay, this was a question that that honestly I don't know much about at all, and I'm hoping that you do. This was around the thyroid, it seems. Please explain removal of a parathyroid gland briefly. If your body needs the PHT that the parathyroid glands produce, how do you function without it? Goes on to say, or is that usually only one of the four is removed? If all were removed, would you then need some type of medication? So this is a thyroid question in regards to someone having to remove their thyroid.
Yeah, it's a parathyroid question. It's if your body needs the PTH, not PHT, but parathyroid hormone. And what that hormone does is regulate calcium metabolism. So usually when you have to take a parathyroid gland out, and I've assisted on many of these, both my dad and my brother did a lot of parathyroid surgeries. You have one that sits on top of each corner of the thyroid. So you have four of them. And the reason you usually take one out is because of a parathyroid adenoma. And that is a tumor, usually benign tumor, of one of the parathyroid glands. That means they put out too much of the hormone and your calcium level gets really high, and which can cause all kinds of problems. So you need to get it out. If that calcium level is over, I think 11.5, it can cause all kinds of arrhythmias, maybe potential cancer in the future. So they need to come out, and they're really tiny. They're about the size of a pea. And so when you go in there and remove one, usually you're just having to take one out. So you have three and they should function fine. You know, if you took them all out, say you had to take a complete thyroid out and you didn't leave at least one of the parathyroid glands, then you're going to really have to take some medication the rest of your life. Mm. But usually when I've seen the whole thyroid gland removed, they tuck one of the parathyroid glands into some other tissue. So it's a pretty neat operation. It's almost like microscopic, but that's a really good question. Because the parathyroid hormone is really important with calcium metabolism. But it's usually one. It's a parathyroid adenoma, and it's not that uncommon. So great question. Hope that explained it.
Did you mention a medication you might need if this happens?
Well, I mean, you won't need it because you have three other ones.
Okay.
But if for some reason they messed up and didn't save one of them, if they had to take your whole thyroid gland out and they, you know, mistakenly couldn't find them or whatever, then you'd have to take a calcitonin agonist the rest of your life. Mm. So and watch the calcium levels really closely.
I love that question. That's a different one. Thank you so much for sending that in. Now you corrected me when I said thyroid versus parathyroid. What is the difference there?
Well, it said PHT. It's PTH, parathyroid hormone.
Got it.
Yeah.
Super interesting. I love hearing you talk about thyroid because.
So if you have an elevated calcium level on your blood work, don't ignore it. Mm. And then if you have that, then you need a parathyroid hormone level checked, blood level checked. So really interesting glandular question. That's really good.
That's super fascinating. Thank you for sending that in over email. I know that like the thyroid, we always feel like, you know, it's just undertreated, like there's not a lot of people talking enough about it. So thank you for sending that in. I'm going to put this up from Dr. Greenfield here. Thank you, Dr. Greenfield, for hanging out with us tonight on LinkedIn. I guess is this my look? Is it Linus or Pigpen?
Yeah, I think one of those. I think Tyler's right with that. Tyler would know a lot about the parathyroid hormones as well. But,
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. I hope you're doing well, Tyler.
Thank you for hanging out with us over there on LinkedIn. All right, let's get to the next question. Let's see here. This is a question that was on Instagram. Do I take estrogen before menopause, meaning while I'm still having a period? We've been putting out a bunch of content on the importance of estrogen in both men and women. Recently, what's your take on this? And then I'll kind of combine it with this question. Why are providers so against bioidentical hormones? Let's start with the estrogen.
Well, yeah, I mean, usually before you hit menopause, your estrogen level is still functioning. In other words, if you're still having periods, your estrogen level is probably okay, but you probably are going to need progesterone and maybe testosterone, maybe DHEA. But you know, that's the tough thing about being a female in the latter part of your 40s when you're still having menstrual cycles, but they're spacing out and you're having symptoms already. You may be having hot flashes, night sweats, because they drop off at different rates. You have four hormones that cycle. And usually what happens is if you're still having periods, you're still putting out estrogen. So most likely you won't need estrogen. You'll need progesterone. As a matter of fact, you're probably estrogen dominant, because when you lose the progesterone first, which you usually do, your estrogen level goes up, because those two kind of balance each other out. And that's why early use of natural progesterone, which leads into the next question, is very helpful for that. Because when you get estrogen dominant before your periods end, then that leads to problems like hyperplasia of the uterus, of the uterine lining, and therefore fibroids. Also fibrocystic breast through over-estrogenization of the breast tissue. So that's when a lot of women start having problems. That's why you have to check the levels. So you need to check the levels. I mean, the proof's in the pudding there. So when we get levels, we'll know exactly how much estrogen you have. And sometimes we even look at the different types of estrogen, you know, estradiol, estriol, and estrone, which is the one you don't want. Estrone is the one you see more associated with menopause, that is associated with more problems. So check the levels. You're probably estrogen dominant, but you probably need the others. And then when your periods stop, your estrogen level bottoms out, you'll need all of them. But I hope that explains it. Get the levels checked and see where they are. And that leads into the question, why are providers so against bioidentical hormones? Well, providers that know about bioidentical hormones are not against them. They're all for them. There's a lot of misunderstanding about hormones in general. And I mean, like as a doctor, if I don't know something about something, I'm not going to use it. You should never prescribe a medication you're not thoroughly familiar with. You know, send them to somebody who does a lot of it. But a lot of them got kind of misinformed years ago when the Women's Health Initiative came out, when they claimed that hormone replacement caused increased evidence of breast cancer. You know, I've gone over this a million times with my patients, but it was so misleading because, for one thing, the average patient, it wasn't even a hormone study. It was a cardiac study. And if you look at the details of the study, the average woman was 17 years postmenopausal. And they were using synthetic hormones, Premarin and Prempro. The Premarin comes from pregnant horse urine estrogens, mostly estrone, the bad one. And the progestin was a synthetic progestin, which is totally different from, it was medroxyprogesterone, which is totally different from a natural progesterone. You know, I would never use a medroxyprogesterone. But anyway, it was misleading because there were really two arms of the study. The first arm was when they just used estrogen. As a matter of fact, it was even horse urine estrogen, Premarin. In that arm of the study, there was less breast cancer than people that didn't take anything. So it's actually protective. If you can believe that, it's true. But when they took the Prempro, which had the medroxyprogesterone in it, then the incidence of breast cancer went from 4 women per thousand to 5 women per thousand. Mm. And they called it a 25% increase in breast cancer with hormones. I mean, that was a ridiculous, erring, terrible tragedy for women in this country because doctors were afraid to use it, afraid to get sued. It may cause breast cancer. No. And plus, they don't know about bioidentical hormones because they don't learn about them. You know, they're not made by big pharma. You have to get them compounded. So, you know, there's no money in it for pharmaceutical companies. So they tend to poo-poo them because there's no money in it and they don't know anything about them. So, you know, when you go to an expert that does a lot of it and has done the research, you know, used it on thousands of women, then you'll know the truth. If you're wondering about it, go read the book by Dr. Pam Smith, all about women's hormones. You know, we know Pam, she comes to all our meetings. To me, she's the guru of women's hormone replacement. So you're doing yourself, after you read her book, you'll be afraid not to take them. But so there's a big, you know, misinformation about them. And it's really kind of coming to light because it's coming a lot more in favor. And certainly, you know, I have a lot of providers that send me the patients because they're not informed. And you really shouldn't do anything you're not informed about. Mm. So that's a 2-second answer to that. So, but great question.
It kind of goes back to, I believe you and Dr. Lucas talked about this. There's no drug reps going into offices and detailing doctors on bioidentical hormones. You know, and you've mentioned before how, you know, a lot of doctors, that's how they stay up to date on things is through drug reps, which is really interesting and kind of unfortunate in ways. It's a great question and one that, you know, I will continue to talk about because people need to know this. And so I appreciate the answer there and I really appreciate that question.
And there's certain people we wouldn't use hormones on.
Yeah.
Like if you had active breast cancer or had a history of estrogen progesterone sensitive breast cancer, you know, you don't want to get on either one of them. Although you can take testosterone, but you have to watch for aromatization to estradiol. So, you know, there's a lot to it, but it's just really interesting. And we kind of like diving into it. But do your own research.
I see Molly's here. Molly, what's going on? Great to see you. Elena, you're here. Thank you so much for hanging out. Terry, great question there. Can't wait to get to that one. Gator Hater, I got your question. Love it. We got a couple more here, and then we're going to get to the live comments. So if you guys got a question for Doc, go ahead and put it in the comments. We're going to get to it in just a minute or two. And this could be, you know, and Katie, you're with us live tonight. If we're wrong here, let us know. This came on Instagram, and I really appreciated it. It's, you know, because I don't know if we have any patients from Canada. The question is, do you guys take patients from Canada? What's your thoughts? I know there's limitations, you know, anytime you go outside the country or state. What's your thoughts on a question like
this? You know, really, nobody's ever asked me that question. But, you know, with the advent of telemedicine, I don't see why not. I mean, I sure would. You know, I don't, you know, this is your body, your decisions. And, you know, you can't let any government tell you what to do with your health. You know, you see what happened when they did. But so sure, you know, I don't mind doing telemedicine consult from anybody all over the world if they, you know. Actually, we did one from Belgium one time, didn't we? You referred me somebody from Belgium, and
I think we did.
We've done a few. I mean, but I you know, it's just advice, you know. And Canada's, you know, that's a great country, and it's just odd the way they do their health care there. You know, in ways maybe better than we do, and yep. ways a lot worse, but because availability is tough, I think. But we tell people to send up for their medicines, or the medicines are a lot cheaper up there for some reason. So, you know, that's another hour-long lecture on why. But, you know, there's not a lot of transparency with drug prices in this country for sure. So the Canadians sure do a better job of that than we do. But, yeah, I mean, sure, just call and get on. We'll do telemedicine with you. And if you ever want to fly down to Tennessee, come down and visit us. We love Canada.
I love that.
Except for those wildfires. The wildfires are terrible up there right now.
Yeah.
I saw a picture of what city was it? Well, I saw the Mackinac Island Bridge. You couldn't even see it. Mm. And it's getting into Chicago and some of the Midwestern towns. Just unbelievable from those forest fires.
Man, prayers out to anyone affected with that. You know, but it is that happens more often than you think. So shout out to the Canadians. If we have any Canadian listeners with us tonight, great question. You know, it's one we haven't gotten before. So thank you for sending that in on Facebook. Okay, I think that does it for the questions who came in over email or through direct message on one of the social platforms. I also have my eye on my email, so if anybody, you know, if I miss somebody's question through email, you can resend it, and I'll catch it. But we're taking questions live in the comments now, and I see Meditation Universe just came up with a question. I love that. Thank you. We're going to go, let's see where we are here. Where am I at? Let's go to WC1A, over on YouTube. Please help me sort my vitamins into morning, afternoon, evening. I take 36 different vitamins, minerals, herbs, amino acids. I don't know what to take with what and when. Is there a way to do this? This is actually a common question, the when and with food or not with food. Any, you know, of course, we don't know the 36 that they're taking. Kind of how are you grouping yours? I know your vitamin count is probably up there in that range. So,
yeah, you know, I really like to spread them out for sure. In general, fat-soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K, you want to take with a fatty meal. Most vitamins usually do better when you take them with a meal. Now, you can take some of the water-soluble ones without meal, like the B and Cs, if you want. But I like to space them out in general. Like, for example, when you take zinc, you better have something on your stomach or it'll make you nauseated. You need to take your magnesium, which is okay to take on an empty stomach at night. And some of the ones you take for energy, for example, B complex, CoQ10, PQQ, you probably want to take them in the morning and they'll be fine. I generally like the omega-3s taken with food. I really like to spread them out. And sometimes you can kind of create your own little routine. You know, one reason I formulated my own multivitamin was to really get a loaded vitamin with a bunch of stuff in it so you wouldn't have to. I was finding myself, you know, every day sorting them out and taking them in a fishing tackle box. But so you know, my multivitamin has a bunch of stuff in the right doses. Usually a multivitamin doesn't have enough in it. You know, like for example, there it is, put it up there, but it has enough of a bunch of stuff. Like I've got 5,000 D with K, MK7, you know, enough vitamin C, vitamin A, the gamma form of E, you know, it just has a bunch of the right kind of doses. So that's really cut down on the amount that I have to take. But I do take a lot of vitamins. You know, anybody 68 years old probably needs a bunch, especially if, you know, you're active and you want to stay healthy. But in general, that's kind of, I hope that helps you a little bit. You don't have to see all the different ones, but I'm really glad you're on all those vitamins. You obviously do the research and look at them, but don't get too obsessed with it. Just if they don't upset your stomach and you get them in, or you can combine them, fine. But I spread them out three different times, and I take my magnesium at night. This is the way I do it.
And the other thing I know you've mentioned quite a bit is taking them 6 out of the 7 days. So taking a 1 day break, or, you know, if you're going to take them 7 days a week, you know, when you go on vacation, take that week off. Something like that, as a way of kind of building in that, we do that so that you don't get too tolerant to them. Am I right on that?
Yeah. I just think they work better if you give them a 1 day a week break.
Yeah. WC1A, I hope that helps. Thank you for putting that in there. And we might, you know, that it kind of gets my wheels turning. We need to either put out an article or something that dives a little bit deeper. If that's something you guys would benefit from, let us know in the comments.
We get that question a lot in the office.
Yeah. Yeah. So. This is from Terry. Is colostrum safe to take as a supplement?
Yeah, I love colostrum. You know, the one I used was organic beef colostrum. So I don't take it regularly now because my gut kind of got straightened out. You know, when I had the second episode of mild COVID, it really got to my gut. And that's one of the things that I credit with really helping get my gut microbiome back to normal. So it really does have a lot of beneficial ingredients in it. You know, but yeah, I love colostrum.
And can you tell us, what is colostrum?
Colostrum is almost, you think about the pre-breast milk in a way.
Okay.
You know, the stuff that babies will get from the breast before the milk starts pumping out real good.
Okay.
So it has all these nutritional benefits for immunity and kind of is beneficial to your gut microbiome. So it's a great little thing to take, especially if you have gut problems. A lot of people do.
Super interesting.
So if you have IBS or things like that, of course, I love Digest Shield. I put probably 10 people on that today because it has everything in it. But colostrum's one it doesn't. So if you're still struggling, get some colostrum, especially if you have immune problems and that type of thing.
Thank you for putting that question in there, Terry. I'm not sure we've gotten a question on colostrum. And as you can see, I didn't know much about it. So thank you for kind of teeing us up there for that conversation. Gator Hater for Life. Let's see here. I believe they are from Louisiana. If so, congrats to the LSU Tigers on the World Series, the College Baseball World Series win last night. They actually beat the Gators.
That's right. I bet you're having a good day. Good week.
Okay. Doctor, I've got a dear friend who's unfortunately dealing with Guillain-Barré syndrome. Guillain-Barré syndrome, and been paralyzed from the waist down for 3 months now. Last nerve test has his doctor saying 20 to 24 heal time with about 80% recovery. So I'm guessing that's 20 to 24 months, maybe. Any suggestions that could help the recovery? Very active before this happened. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, that's a tough one. A lot of times, Guillain-Barré will follow a viral illness, even sometimes a vaccine. You know, I've seen that several times. It's like a progressive motor paralysis that, I mean, I've seen it get so bad that they had to be intubated because they couldn't breathe on their own. Mm. But a lot of times they don't know the cause. But one thing I would do, I'm sure they're looking at this, is look at all your, I'd do something like a Cleveland panel where you could look at all the vitamin levels and hormone levels. I'd want everything optimized. You know, hopefully your friend's able to have a good nutritional pattern. I certainly make sure my gut microbiome was good, and I bet it's off. So something like that. You know, I would say over anything, nutritional status, and I'd certainly look at the hormones as well. I mean, you could try a few off the wall things that may help as well. You know, I always like vitamin B6 for any kind of neuropathy. I'd really look closely at a vitamin panel and inflammatory markers. And, you know, there'd be some off the wall things you could do, like quercetin. You know, and usually it clears up, but sometimes it takes months. So I hope that helps. Look outside the box a little bit. You know, that's something I would, you know, in the right circumstances, maybe even use methylene blue on.
Man, we're going to be thinking about your friend. I hope they recover quicker, or, you know, 80% sounds, you know, positive. So thank you for putting that question. I hope that helps them. Let's see here. I'm going to go to real quick over to Lisa here. Lisa shares the broadcast. Thank you so much, because it has to do with this last question. How much vitamin B6 for neuropathy?
I wouldn't go over 100 milligrams.
Okay.
Because interestingly enough, if you go over 100 milligrams, it'll make your neuropathy come back. You know, it's one of those things you got to kind of titrate pretty good. So, you know, I would get between 50 and 100 milligrams of B6.
Yeah.
Pyridoxal.
Thank you for that, Lisa. Oh, is that 100 daily? Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Uh-huh.
100 daily, Lisa. Thank you so much for that question. I'm going to get to Carol over here on Facebook. Coming off of a stomach virus, what is the best way to get back on your vitamins? This is a great question. You know, because it's just a common thing. So what's your thoughts on this?
That's one reason I tell patients, always have some activated charcoal in your house, because that's a great thing to take when you start to get a stomach virus, because it absorbs. You know, that's what we'll pump somebody's stomach with when they come in with an overdose in the ER. I've seen that done many times. So keep some of that around. And when you, so I'd still be on it. If you're coming off a stomach virus, I would still be taking it. As a matter of fact, I have one. It's called a GI detox. I have that at my house in addition to some activated charcoal. And that has activated charcoal in it, along with a couple other herbs. I'm trying to think of the name of the other herbs. I'll think of it. I'll maybe show it to you. But get on that one for sure. And then slowly get back on your vitamins. You know, things like zinc and things and other, you know, you got to be careful with taking them. They can make your stomach worse. So go along with a soft diet and then slowly progress it up. Get on something like a BRAT diet. When you take activated charcoal or even the GI detox, make sure that you don't take any other vitamins or medicines or minerals within an hour on each side of when you take that, because it'll kind of delay the absorption of that, so you won't get the benefits. So go slowly, think about activated charcoal, and I'll try to get Jenny to bring that, my little GI detox pill up, which is also great for you know, maybe metal detoxification. If you think you have mold or metals, you have a problem with that, it's a good little gut pill to take. And I always like the infrared sauna. I like you to sweat things out as well. And drink a lot of water.
You know, you've talked a lot about, you know, kind of a few things to have at the house for scenarios similar to this. And I know activated charcoal was one. I didn't know that about the GI detox. So is that something that you would add just as something to have in the house?
No, I would have the activated charcoal. Before. I would have the GI detox just to take if you have gut problems. I got it when I was having those gut problems from post-COVID. Mm-hmm. But, you know, no, have the activated charcoal around for emergencies and travel with it, especially if you're going to a foreign country like Mexico. You better have some of that around.
You know, Carol, I'm really glad you asked this because it's that like questions like these are exactly kind of the, you know, the purpose behind this show. And one of the things that, you know, I've been so lucky to get to, you know, whenever I have something like this come up, I get to just call you and ask, you know, what do I do with this? And, you know, I want that for everyone in here. So these questions are so good. And Doc, thank you for sharing that with Carol. And I know that's going to help more than just Carol tonight. So thank you for putting that question in there. And I'm sure we'll get the GI detox here in just a second. I'm going to put this up from One Step Forward. Thank you. Great podcast today. We appreciate you watching or listening, whatever your preferred medium is. Let's get to Elena here over on YouTube. What can cause a swollen thyroid? Can you
That's
feel
a
swollen
question.
Thyroid? Is that different from like a swollen lymph node?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Two totally different things. You know, your thyroid is located along the bottom of your throat. It's actually a fairly large gland. It's spread out, but certainly thyroiditis, you can have an acute thyroiditis, an inflammation. Your thyroid can get really inflamed. It's usually a virally mediated thing. Usually the most common one is Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And then there's another one called Graves' disease, but they're both autoimmune diseases that inflame your thyroid gland and cause all kinds of problems. Sometimes you can feel it. It'll be tender. And, you know, you can have nodules. And then it can just totally wipe out your thyroid function. That's the most common cause of hypothyroidism, which is a lot more common than hyperthyroidism, Graves' disease. But certainly, you know, even lack of iodine or too much iodine could change the size of your thyroid gland. So, and a lot of times you can just look at somebody and you want to tell them your thyroid's enlarged. You better get that checked out with some blood test. And usually I'll scan it with an ultrasound to see if you have a multinodular goiter. You know, back in the 30s and 40s, you know, back in the goiter belt, which we live in, you know, you had these huge thyroids. Basically because of lack of iodine, you know, so it's really interesting. You don't see that so much anymore.
Yeah.
Because they put iodine in salt and foods and things. We're seeing a little bit of a recurrence because they're taking a lot of the iodine out of salt. You know, you get salt without iodine now. But that's the reason they put iodine in salt, you know, when those gorges were popping up.
Yeah, that is interesting, actually. And I think, Elena, if you go on our website or our YouTube channel, if you search for thyroid or Hashimoto's, I think we talked a little. I know we talked about the goiters thing, but definitely there's a couple more resources you can tap into around that. Anything you want to add before we go to the next question?
Well, even, you know, even pregnancy, other hormonal changes can cause a thyroid problem. Mm. You know, your thyroid is very interrelated with insulin resistance and also the adrenal hormones like cortisol. They interplay a lot. So if one of them's off, the other one's going to be off. So it can cause, when your thyroid gets big, it's just trying to work harder. You know, it's trying to put out more of your thyroid hormones. So you could have a goiter with totally normal thyroid function test.
Interesting.
And you can shrink it down by using thyroid medication, even with normal thyroid test.
That's fascinating. The thyroid is so fascinating, and there's so many like layers to it.
And if you're my brother or probably dad, you know, you want to get that thyroid taken out. They love to operate on preserving the parathyroid glands.
Elena, thank you so much for that question there. Okay, let's get to Meditation Universe's question on YouTube. And we have a couple people that just came in. Welcome to the Performance Medicine Show. If you're new here, if you have a question for Doc, we're answering live questions here.
And one last thing on the enlarged thyroid. You have to rule out thyroid cancer as well.
Yep.
Usually, my brother told me, if you had to have a cancer, you'd probably want thyroid cancer because it's 99% curable by taking it out. But you have to make sure, you know. But anyway.
All right. Thank you for that, Elena. Let's get to Meditation Universe. Doctor, I'm a 60-year-old male, and lately I'm having balance issues to the point where I almost fall over. Also, walking a straight line is difficult at times. Any suggestions on supplements? And let's see if there's a continuation there. If not, I think we can work with that Meditation Universe. It seems this is a balance question. I know this is like, I'll never forget, you know, as granddad aged, you know, he would walk a certain way. You remember how he used to walk with his hands behind his back?
Yeah, that was posture related.
Was that posture?
But it was to help the balance. You're right. One thing I will tell you, any 60-year-old person needs to be able to learn how to get up off the floor without using your arms. I'm going to do a demo on that sometime. You'd be surprised how many people can't do it.
Yeah. Honestly, when I think about it, I think I'd have a tough time doing it. I need to.
No, you could do it easily. But you'd be surprised how many people can't do that. So I think working on it, I can even show you a really simple way of using one arm, but I prefer you learn how to do it without your hands.
I'll
demonstrate a technique on how to do that. You have to have some hip and knee flexibility strength, but there is a way to do it. And you need to work on your balance as you get older for sure. Stand on one leg, stand on the other. But it sounds like to me, you know, you need that worked up because you shouldn't have a problem walking a straight line. You may have inner ear difficulties. You may have a neuropathy. But I certainly think you need to get that checked out. You know, you could have benign positional vertigo. You could have Meniere's disease. Usually that's associated with dizziness, loss of hearing, and ringing in the ears, tinnitus. But that's something I hope you get worked out. If that was me, I'd probably have my head scanned as well. I'd get an MRI of my brain just to make sure there's nothing else going on. And then if that's normal, which hopefully it will be, then you may see if it's benign positional vertigo. There are these little Epley maneuvers you can do to straighten that out. So you may have some little crystals falling off in your inner ear that's making your balance awkward. You could have an orthopedic problem.
Yep.
That's causing some of that. You could be having a visual problem. As far as supplements and all, you know, I always like the B vitamins, but I'd rather find out why you have that, because that's not really kind of normal. So I don't know if it's an orthopedic problem. I don't know if it's a head problem, an ear problem, or what, but it certainly deserves a workup. You may have a peripheral neuropathy, you know, proprioception, something we talk about that's very important. That's your connectedness to the earth. And that, I think people lose some of their proprioception, you know, and you can't feel it. You know, most people can feel it through their toes when they're off balance, and immediately they correct it. It's just an automatic type thing. But when you lose that proprioception, then you're going to fall. And you don't want to fall.
Yep.
That's one of the worst things that can happen to you as you get older is falling. And I warned a patient today about this. He had fallen, and it was reminding me of when my niece was in the Shepherd Center in Atlanta for months, at getting over a traumatic head injury from a car accident. And the nurse, and that's a world famous place for head injuries, spinal injuries. And she asked my brother a question one night. He spent months down there with her. Why do you think most people are in here? And he didn't know. And she goes, ladders.
Really?
She said, ladders.
Wow.
I had a guy today who talked about falling off a ladder. So be careful on ladders. I'm telling you.
That's interesting. I would not have thought about that.
There's two things I tell people to avoid head injuries. Stay off of ladders. And when you're driving into an intersection, look left, right, and then left again.
Yeah.
You got to look left again.
Real quick, just because I know how big of a deal, balance is, especially as we age, is there anything that you do in your exercise routine, anything that you kind of are preventatively working on your balance, anything that people can do?
Uh-huh. I stand on one leg, stand on the other. I do step-ups very slowly. Dr. Atiyah gives a good demonstration on how to do a proper step-up. So controlled stepping up and stepping down. You need to work on your core because that's so important. You need to work on your flexibility. But I actually do some balance exercises. Come see Ernie. Ernie Dixon's helped me out tremendously with working on balance, and he works with patients every day on this. Very important.
I'll put this up from Ann on Facebook. I honestly, that would be kind of tough. Stand on one foot while brushing teeth would be a challenge.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Well, maybe with your other hand, your non-dominant hand.
Yeah.
I think that helps. Like, eat with your left hand if you're right-handed sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's a great comment, Ann. Just great idea. Then close your eyes. And see how tough that is.
Man, that throws in a whole other layer. I've done some exercise stuff where I think it's like you're on a balance board and, originally you're with your, eyes open and you're fine. And then like you close your eyes and
it's tough. You've worked with visualization, tracking your eyes really helps a lot. I have a bocce ball in my gym that I'll stand on one foot. It's tough, but it's really helps your balance. I'll do push-ups on that bocce ball. I'll just stand on it. Then I have a mini trampoline I'll get on too.
Yeah.
Which also helps lymphatic drainage.
You're talking about the half moon.
Half moon bocce ball. I think that's what it's called.
And we'll kind of, we'll get to another question here shortly, but be careful with all these, suggestions we're making. Have a workout buddy, somebody with you, because you don't want to fall like Doc is saying. But those are great. Balance is such a big issue, and Meditation Universe, thank you so much for putting in that question, and because it's something that everybody deals with at one point. So I want to get to Caitlin's question here. Let's see here. Have you heard about how thiamine, I don't know why it's hard for me to pronounce thiamine, vitamin B1 can be a contributing factor to many chronic conditions.
It can.
If so, what do you think about?
Yeah, the best form of it too, is supplements, benfotiamine is the best, most absorbable way to get that. But yeah, I mean, it's really important. You think about it in alcoholics, think about Wernicke's encephalopathy, things like that, neuropathies. That's why I suggest a complete B complex vitamin to most of my patients that has B1, B2, all the way through B12. But very important. Thiamine is really important, and it's probably important for balance. You know, it's really for cognitive function. It gets depleted, especially with alcoholism. First thing you do if somebody's detoxing, going into DTs, is give them a shot of thiamine. Yeah, really important for cognition. And it probably causes a host of things we don't even know about when you're deficient in that. So certainly one of those, it's in my B complex for sure.
All right, Caitlin, I hope that helps. Thank you for putting that question in there. Let's get to...
I think we did a podcast on thiamine one time. Maybe. If not, I need to do one. I'll look back and see. If I haven't done one, I need to do one on thiamine. I think I did one on benfotamine one time.
Yeah,
really, it's been years ago.
I think you did. I'll look that up on our website. If Caitlin, if you want to either go to our website, performancemedicine.net, or the YouTube channel and search for vitamin B, and something will come up, because I know we've talked about vitamin B, but there's a lot of vitamin Bs, and I'm not sure if we focused on B1. Let's get to Job for Nine here over on YouTube. What are the doctor's thoughts about taking methylene blue daily?
Yeah, I take it most days. I like methylene blue. You know, it's pharmaceutical grade. It's inexpensive. I think it helps, you know, cognitive function. I think it helps energy. I think it helps you breathe better. Certainly, we use it a lot on long COVID patients. Definitely, you know, it's like night and day for a lot of people. We were driving to the beach about a month ago, and we were tired, you know, about to fall. You know how you get drowsy when you're driving, and both of us were drowsy, so I thought, we're going to have to pull over here because I don't want to run off the road. So I had some methylene blue. We both put 8 drops in a glass of water and drank, and it was like taking Adderall or something. You know, it really made you more alert. So, I like methylene blue.
So I know you, so as far as daily use, you're totally cool with it?
I'm fine with it. You know, there's been a lot of people think, well, you can't take it if you're taking an SSRI or you haven't had a G6PD drawn. Not really, you know, unless you're taking huge doses of it for different reasons, like Alzheimer's or things like that. But, you know, it's safe. It's been around for 100 years. And, you know, 100 years ago, they didn't even know what a G6PD was. So, or an SSRI. So, yeah, I think it's safe. I really do.
Hope that helps Job for Nine on YouTube. Yeah, super interesting. I feel like in our household, for those who don't know, that Doc is my dad as well. And I feel like we've gone from, you know, middle of the afternoon kind of hitting a drag from going like, I need a coffee, to, you know, where's the methylene blue?
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing. Do not let your dogs get into the methylene blue.
Bad news.
Yeah. If your dogs dig into the package of methylene blue that's been sent to your house, that's not a good thing.
It
won't kill your dog. It's just so hard to get out. I wish we had a picture of my, in other words, our two dogs got into a package.
There they are.
Yeah. See, it's on their mouth or paws, and that stuff does not come out. Be careful.
Nine,
it stains everything.
Look at those feet. Y'all see those paws?
You should see our rug and our hardwood floors.
If there's anyone who doesn't need an energy boost, I'm thinking it's Izzy and Ike.
Yeah, they don't need it.
I think maybe you and me need the energy from methylene blue, but Ike and Izzy, they're totally okay without the methylene blue.
Methylene blue helps mitochondrial respiration. That's kind of how it works. It has a lot to do with the electron transport chain, a lot of detailed biochemistry, but it's safe. It works. Turns your tongue blue too for a while. Turn the pee blue.
I'll tell you, Lisa, this is not a dumb question because I don't know. I don't know the answer at all. But I know Doc does, so I'm going to put it in here, but definitely not a dumb question. There are no dumb questions on the Performance Medicine Show. The question is, if you have had a total thyroidectomy and a partial parathyroidectomy, does that make me hyperthyroid or hypothyroid?
Probably none, you know, okay. Because you still have both. You still, it sounds like you still have your thyroid and at least one of your parathyroids. So you'll know by the blood work if your calcium levels are normal, parathyroid levels normal, thyroid function tests are normal, then you probably, what's we call it, euthyroid. EU thyroid, which means you're balanced, but you'd be more likely to be hypo over hyper. That's a good question.
That's a great question, Lisa. Thank you for putting that in there. Let's see. Let's go to Allison. Can you tell me about drink thickeners for patients that have trouble swallowing and need to protect their lungs? Are the thickeners prescriptions? Do you have one you prefer? Do you need to be careful in using these? I don't know what a drink thickener is. I have heard about, you know, when patients have trouble swallowing. What's your take on this?
You know, Allison, that's a great question, and I don't have a favorite. But the person to answer that question, and I'll find out because my niece is in speech therapy school at UT. She had getting her master's at UT in this, so I'll ask her. But yeah, they, you know, it just kind of prevents you from aspirating, you know, if you're having swallowing difficulties, which is what a lot of the speech therapists work on. So, you know, for example, if you had a stroke or something and you can't, you know, the muscles that you swallow with are off, it predisposes you to get an aspiration pneumonia. So there are thickeners. It's been so long since I've prescribed one. That I don't know, but I'll find out for you and we'll get a good answer for you on that. Great question.
But they are prescription?
I think you can probably even get them over the counter, okay. But I'll find out. Okay. I'll find that out.
More to come on that, Allison. We will do some digging with Ruthie and get the answer here for you. Thank you for putting that in there. Interesting question. These are such great questions tonight, guys. I'm just going to go ahead and
say. We've got some good questions tonight. This is one of the best nights.
Y'all get a 10. Y'all absolutely get a 10. And I'm going to put this up from Job for 9 because, you know, this combo is, I know one that you're a fan of as well. Using methylene blue with red light therapy, that's quite the combo. Quite the combo.
Yeah. I get my infrared sauna with my red light therapy most every day.
And I'm going to put this up from Jack because I'm wondering where are the
pups? Let's bring the pups. Is it about time? We'll have Jenny bring the pups down here. Everybody wants to see the pups.
I believe it's.
But I didn't get guitar questions tonight. I like the guitar questions the best.
One thing we didn't mention: my girlfriend Amanda is also a speech therapist, and she just texted me.
Saying, what does she have preference?
Saying that they're not prescription. So they aren't prescription. Okay. And
does she have a favorite?
I'll wait for Amanda. If you have a favorite, let us know. If you have a favorite drink thickener. Until we get that answer, we have a couple questions coming. If you have a question for Doc, go ahead and put it in. We're going to go do a little rapid fire. Tammy here on Facebook is saying, if you have a MTHFR mutation, what is the best B vitamin?
Great question. I have two copies of the bad MTHFR mutation as well, the 677TT homozygous mutations, meaning it's kind of complex. I think it took me 2 years to understand that methylation gene. It has a lot to do with the cycling of methionine and homocysteine and back and forth. But usually if you have one of the mutations or certainly both of them, you're going to have a high homocysteine level. You can't clear it. And homocysteine is an inflammatory amino acid that you don't want high because it predisposes you to blood clots, heart disease, miscarriages, all the things that increases your risk. So that's a great question. I had an example of this today. So what you need is the methylated form of the B vitamins. And certainly that's one I always recommend. Anyway, whether you have an MTHFR mutation or not, then you need the methyl B12, methylcobalamin, not cyanocobalamin. I had a guy today, brought his in, and he'd been taking B12 sublingual, which is the correct way to do that one. And, you know, I looked at it. He said, is this good? And I looked at it. It was cyanic cobalamin. Mm-hmm. So, no, it wasn't good. And also, it was folic acid. So people that have a mutation have a hard time turning folic acid into methylfolate, the active form of vitamin B9, which is so important for cognition, brain function, neurofunction in general. So just make sure it's methylated. And there's some other ways to bring down a high homocysteine level as well, like trimethylglycine is one I take because my levels tend to creep up. But doing these, I've been able to keep them down. Avoid folic acid because that's actually bad for you. You think you're getting folate, you're getting folic acid. If you can't methylate it, it gets toxic. So use the methylated versions of your B vitamins.
And real quick, Tammy, if you search for MTHFR on our YouTube channel, this Explain This episode goes into detail on this mutation. So I would highly recommend checking out that episode that Robin did. Dives a bit deeper, but great question.
She does a great job on that.
Great question there. Thank you for putting that in. And I did get...
And by the way, the MTHFR gene mutation is on every Cleveland that I do because I want to know that number.
Yep.
I mean, if you have a high homocysteine level, it's about as important as if you have a high cholesterol level. So you need to look at that as well to reduce your risk factors for heart disease.
Thank you, Tammy, for that. And for Allison here, Amanda is saying she does mostly peds. Friends in the adult world like Simply Thick as a thickener. Mm-hmm. So Simply Thick is the one.
Thank you.
That Amanda's saying. So thank you for texting me that, Amanda. All right, let's get to Rachel. I love this question because I know, we've had a lot of our team is, you know, they've come from, you know, working nights in hospitals. And, you know, I know you work a lot with shift work syndrome as well, just with, you know, lots of different jobs require, different hours. The question is, what is recommended for shift work syndrome, specifically for a 40-year-old man?
Yeah, for one thing, get all the blood work done. I see a lot of guys with shift work syndrome that have low testosterone, and they get their sleep cycles all screwed up. They end up with low T. So definitely check that as well. Just a Cleveland panel for looking at it all. But it's tough. You know, sometimes I use melatonin to get them back into a sleep pattern. But my favorite thing to use is a prescription medicine if it really is causing a problem and for use as needed. And it's Provigil.
Yeah.
Generic modafinil, which is a wonderful medicine for the right person. It's really for daytime sleepiness. It's for shift worker syndrome. You'll find a lot of your jet pilots will use it before a mission because it just really helps you to focus and stay awake. I've tried it studying for boards and that really is good. And now that's generic, it's not expensive. It used to be just prohibitively expensive, but nowadays you can get generic and shop around if you're going to get it. It's a prescription medicine, of course. I equate it to drinking a whole pot of coffee without the side effects is the way I look at it. Matter of fact, I treat a lot of ADD patients with it. You know, it works good for that too. And it's not a class two, it's a class four drug. So they're not so strict on it. I had a guy the other day that drove all the way up from Knoxville to see me for narcolepsy.
Yeah.
That and shift worker syndrome are the two indications for it. And he had an obvious case of narcolepsy detected through a sleep study and just listening to him. He'd fall asleep while he's talking to you. But in any event, so I prescribe modafinil to him, and he goes to the CVS in Knoxville to get it filled, calls me back that afternoon and says, I can't take this medicine. It's $750 a month. And I go, for the generic? And he was right there. Yeah, the generic at CVS was $750. So I said, hang on 1 second. So I had my nurse look it up on GoodRx. You can get it at Food City for $35. That's how transparent our medical system is with pricing.
I'll
$35 a month, you know, for a month's worth versus $7.50. So always, if you get something like that, always question it.
Yeah, you talk a lot about shopping around for medications. I cannot understand how do you go from $7.50 to $35? And I'm going to put this up from Katie, because this is like your favorite drug story, because it's
I do like it. Yeah.
Because it does, you know, I think it says a whole lot, you know, in like five sentences, you know, you can learn a lot about the healthcare system and also just, you know, how we look at things. And I think the way we do things at Performance Medicine and the Performance Medicine Show is, you know, where, you know, this is a thing we need to shop around. We need to be smart about how, you know, we use our healthcare dollars. So it's really interesting. Rachel, thank you for that question, because, you know, this is something that, you know, affects a lot of people. Anything you want to add on that, Doc?
No. Yeah. I've got a bunch of stories like that I love telling, these patient experience stories, without using names, of course, but, the craziness of it all, as far as no transparency in, medicine, like Dr. Atiyah, who I follow. He's great with longevity. He's a Stanford John Hopkins surgeon and turned functional medicine doctor, longevity expert. He just wrote the book Outlive. He's been on Oprah. He has a series with Chris Hemsworth that's really good. But he got on there the other day, last week, and said he was riffing on the same thing I always riff on. And his 10-year-old son got sick, and he was in San Diego at the time. So he had to, he just thought he was dehydrated, and he didn't want to treat him as is smart not to treat your own family. But so he takes him to the ER, and sure enough, it was just dehydration. So he got a liter of normal saline, and they ran an electrolyte, a CMP blood test on him, which was normal. So in 2 hours, he was out of there. You know, he was better. So he was just dehydrated. But a few days later, he gets a bill from the hospital for $10,000 for that. And so, no, maybe it was $8,000. It was some ridiculous amount. Maybe it was $8,000 and something close to that. But anyway, so his insurance paid $4,000. So he was just left with a $2,500 bill for that. And, you know, he was kind of deciphering it, because he studies things. He looks deep into things. And there was a miscellaneous charge for $2,000. Nobody knew what that was for. And for the CMP, that blood test, which we charged $23 for that in our office. They charged him $2,000 for it. And then, so we charged $23 at $2,000. Then for the liter of saline, I think it was around $1,800 or more for a liter of saline, something we do for, I think, $125 in our office all the time. So that's why I run a cash practice, and don't fool with insurances, because you're going to get ripped off. And then you have to pay your, you know, well, it didn't cover, you think you're getting a bargain. Well, you still got ripped off majorly. So transparency in medicine is something I get pretty excited about.
Yeah, anyway. I think, you know, what's so interesting is, you know, somebody goes in to an office at a traditional type, you know, clinic. And then what people don't realize is there's this, you know, interaction between that office and your insurance company over the course of days, I'm sure, to figure out what to charge you, what the office gets, what the insurance company, like it's crazy how much, how many things are happening that have nothing to do with that patient.
No, nobody knows what it's going to cost. Nobody. and even the people that are charging it, that, you know, the insurance companies don't know, the executives don't know, the doctors don't know, the front office doesn't know, you know, they don't have a clue. And then if you have a high deductible, you're going to get ripped off. You know, you're probably never going to meet that deductible anyway, hopefully. And so that's why 18 years ago, I decided I'm just going to do cash practice. And now we have a cash-only urgent care center in Kingsport that's been great.
Yep.
You know, because people just won't, you know, you don't have a lot of incentive to run unnecessary tests to bump the bill up. But that's another matter. We're not here to talk about economics.
I love the topic. And I'm going to put this up from Gator Hater because I got this wrong. So Gator Hater is a Florida State. That's what it is. Cause go Noles. It's not go Tigers. So yes, I agree with you as a Vol. Anytime the Gators lose is a good day. I want to get to a couple more. Butch is asking, can you spell that drug? I believe you're talking about Provigil.
Provigil, yeah, Provigil. That's the brand name.
The Provigil. Generic. What is
Modenafil?
Modenafil is the
Modinifil.
All right. Hope that helps, Butch. Let's get to.
Yeah, you want to go with the generic on that one.
I believe we do. Do you carry the methylated B complex in the office?
Yeah, all our Bs are methylated.
So any B in one of our offices will.
They're all methylated.
All right. Thank you for that, Cindy. All right, Katie. Thank you. I my hair was a cause of a little anxiety before the show. It was a mess. But you know, as we got through the show, you know, you get in the flow. but thank you. Okay. That's right. We love you. I'm looking for my outro. Brad, take it away, man. No. Brad, where you at? Brad, take it away.
Don't go away.
Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode of the podcast. Please share the podcast with your friends. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. We will see you guys next time.